Depression by Dolores Marjata at 125 West Dunlap on May the 12th, 1976 at 6:30 p.m. Ms. Earnhardt, do you remember much about the Depression?
Oh, yeah. I mean, is this close enough? I remember a lot about it. People losing their homes and men going down the mill. Every day they had to go down there to report for work in a line. And the boss would come out, pick one, two, three men, and the rest of you go home and come back tomorrow morning. And you better be here in case we need you. Then those ones that was working, off the record, they kicked back some of their pay to these guys so they would get work, and so on and so forth. So I understand that. So as we know, all the folks went through the Depression know about the soup lines and the bread lines and places where they give clothes away and shoes and flour they used to give to people. I don't know who furnished that, whether that was state or federal. Of course, we didn't get much from Hoover. He was trying to balance the budget, and he didn't care whether the nation starved or not.
Do you think this is why maybe Roosevelt
won the election? Well, absolutely. They had to have a change. It's just like a man doing nothing. And, of course, we didn't know what Roosevelt was going to do till he got in there. And he tried to help the working man out. And I think he did a lot. He made a lot of mistakes, which everybody does. He sure got things moving, whether it cost us later on for taxes or not, I don't know, but it sure stimulated the economy and got the money back where it would do the most good. The average man is the man who keeps this country going, a little fella, because when he hasn't got the money to buy merchandise, that's where the rub comes in. The mills go down, the factories go down, there's nobody to buy anything, so they can't make it, and then the first thing you know, we get a big layoff. And that goes on and on until they stimulate the economy. I think in a whole, though, the Depression, people helped each other out a lot. I know, because I was driving an ice wagon, and I used to help people out, try to, and people with bottle babies had to have ice and no money. You couldn't leave them without ice. You had to give them credit, and some of them paid later, some of them never did, but it never broke me. But
Where did you have your ice back?
On the east side.
On the east side?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I worked over there on that one route for about 9 years.
And you probably were able to see a lot of things that, you know, we aren't aware of.
Oh, yes, these little groceries around the neighborhood, you got to give them 100% credit. They give credit to people and save stuff for them so they could make out, trimming the vegetables. They used to trim the vegetables off, you know, and they'd save them for people to make soup with. And a bone out of the meat, they'd save that for them. And they tried to help out. And I know one grocer in particular. But after the Depression started to get over, he had so much credit out of he went under. He went bankrupt trying to stock his store again when business did pick up. And just naturally had to close the store. But you find people like that, you give them credit and you try to help them out, and then when they get on their feet, they forget that somebody helped them out. But not all of them. When we rented this house here during the Depression, before we bought it later, the man who owned this house, and I don't know how many more he owned, I think he told us that we was the only one paying him rent, that he just went around and wanted to know how the new baby was. He couldn't collect any rent because they didn't have it. And he finally lost everything he had and went into bankruptcy.
Where were you living at that time?
Well, we lived on Mahoning Avenue from 28 to 20 to 30, and we moved here in 30. And been here ever since. But we rented this house before we bought it for a while. And we got a depression when I bought it.
And then you worked most of the time during the depression?
Yeah, I worked from daylight till dark. There was no quitting hours for $2.60 a day.
What's the typical day on a nice truck like?
Well, it's a lot of hard work, I'll tell you, and you didn't loaf around like labor does today. They wouldn't put up with that. You really worked.
Did you have to load the truck yourself?
Oh, yeah, loaded and run up and down stairs with all that. These apartment houses and everything, you run your legs off. But you did it, because they get somebody else. So it's no way out. You just work with them. Daylight till they got through with you, you couldn't see the ice cards they used to put in the window. Then you had to come home because you couldn't see after dark.
What about the kids jumping on the back of the wagon?
Oh, yes. No, not too much trouble. They'd chop them up a little ice and throw it in the devil strip there in the green grass, and they'd pick it out, and then I'd get in the truck and get away before they get back on again. That's about the only way you could do it. Kids as kids, you watched, you didn't hurt them. No, I didn't have too much trouble with them. Yeah. Yes, when I was peddling ice, it was rather high for retail at that time, considering wages. It sold for 70 cents a hundred, and that's retail, and then wholesale was 35. According to your needs, you had some small stores that paid 50 cents and 60. Then finally, that was during the Depression that the ice was so high. And when we started out of Depression, I don't know what happened, but they cut the price of ice to 66 cents a hundred and took the sales tax off of it. Somehow they got mixed up there in the high of Congress and it went through. I don't know how, but it went through. That was a big help to us. It was a lot of bother with those crazy stamps.
What is the
little stamps you used to have to give to people when they pay you 3 cents a dollar, it was then, and so on and so forth. So you had to give them a stamp. You had to use so many of them stamps. You had to buy them, the company, and you had to get rid of them. That's how the state collected their sales tax. And finally, they don't use them more at all. Stamps, I guess they just pay so much percentage, I guess. Now, I don't know.
Well, what were your wages like?
During the Depression, before the Depression, I made $18 a week, and then when the Depression hit, the ice company take advantage of everything they could. They cut us down to around $15 a week to, $2.60 a day. And I sold as much ice in during the Depression as I did before, because after all, there was people that did have money and had to have ice, and it was like food. They had to buy ice to keep their food, bottle babies, and people had, and they had to have ice to keep the food from spoiling. But it wasn't only the ice company, but it was all companies took advantage of the workers. They figured they cut their wages and get all they could out of them, because they had 10, 15 men or 20 men for every job. And you just had to do what they wanted to or not. If you was late for work in the morning in the ice wagon, boy, when you got there, your truck was gone. You didn't work that day. Somebody else had it out. They wouldn't take no for an answer. When you got through your work in the evening, if it was a little cold in the fall or something, why, you did other work, prepared trucks or whatever they had to do, work in the storage. Just till they got through with you, there was no quitting time at all. I had people on this street during the Depression tell me they wouldn't work for that kind of money in them long hours, but after all, I was working and they wasn't. They felt that nobody should work them hours. But you had no unions, you had nothing, nobody to protect you. And I think that's the whole thing in
in a nutshell, is why there's unions today. If men could sit down and work things out, they wouldn't need a union. But you can't, because they won't listen to the men. You try to dicker with them and just this or that.
Well, getting back to the
VA,
how did they make ice?
Well, they had cans down in O'Brien, 400-pound can, a long can, that the block weighed really 420 pounds. And they filled that with fresh water, distilled water, incidentally. They distilled it over again after they got it from the city water line to clean it up, take all the impurities out of it. And then it was an airline in each can that kept that water agitated while it froze. It froze around the outside edge first. And then it would freeze to, maybe solid to 3-4 inches in the center. And then they cleaned that out. All the impurities went to the center, and they sucked that out with the airline and refill it. And your block of ice is real nice and clear. Then they'd lift them cans out of the big brine tank and take them over and put them in a temperature a little bit warmer than your ice to loosen them from the can. And they'd dump them. And they'd go down the chute and the conveyor and into the storage room. And then they would, in later years, they had a scoring machine which scored that ice in 100-pound chunks, 25 and 50, whatever you needed. And you, out on the route, you cut it the rest of the way off. And it broke nice and straight for you. Before, you used to get a crooked cut and everything else with it, so they modernized that with this, what they call a scoring machine. It was a machine with a lot of saws in it. The block of ice went through there, and it made that preparation in it, I'd say 1.5 inches deep. And then you put your ice pick in there and hit a couple times, broke nice and straight. 25s, 50s, 100s, or of course, a butcher wouldn't leave you. These great big butcher shops, they wouldn't leave you carry less than 200 pounds because the smaller the piece of ice, the more surfaces there are to melt, and it melts faster. So they wanted it in big chunks, and they're cooler, so the last one is. I remember I started in 1923 at the old Crystal Ice and Storage Company at Westlake Crossing, and they had a plant there that made 300-pound blocks. And these butchers insisted you carry them in. Of course, the company got after him and said it was too much for a man to carry them constantly. But I have carried them in different instances for some customer that you couldn't get along with because there was other companies in town and you had to keep your trade. But finally they abolished that plan and we didn't have nothing but 400 pound box. Nobody would ask you to carry one of those. I did carry one. I'll show you a picture of it later on.
Now, when you said you started back in 1923, mm-hmm. What kind of truck did you have?
We didn't have trucks. We had horses, horse and wagon. Yes, we used the horses in a great big German-built wagon, full-circle wagon. And clean them horses in the morning, go out and they're out, smell like a horse all day. And then, I think it was 1925, we had a big fire down where the barn used to set under the Belmont Bridge there. Well, the bridge wasn't there then, but down in that section, and burnt most of the horses up. And burned them, a lot of them so bad they had to kill them the next morning. So trucks were coming into their own at that time, so we bought a fleet of Ford trucks. Wasn't broke in, and we burnt engine after engine up during the hot season because we didn't have time to break them in. You know, all that mechanic was doing down there was changing engine parts. So fall coming, we could quiet the engine down a little and give them a rest once in a while.
Now going back to the
horse, did
you have the same horse every day?
Same team, yes. Same
two horses?
Two, yes. Mm-hmm. Them ice wagons were rolled easy. You could. On level ground, you could pull one yourself loaded with ice. That's what I say. It was a German patent wagon, a great big heavy wagon. The front wheels went clear around underneath it. You could turn on the full circle with it. And Those horses, they were trained, they wouldn't hit a car parked in the street or nothing. They walk right around it. I don't know, they seemed to know the enough clearance and everything else. You didn't even have to drive them around. But they walked right around a car or another wagon or buggy or whatever it was parked. Oh, yeah. I swear sometimes that they could see ice cards. Because, yeah, they'd pull up and stop, and you'll look around and wonder why they're stopping. Here you look around under the trees, and there's a knife out sticking in the window. So maybe the horse saw it, and I didn't. I don't know, but yeah, I swear they did. Of course, when you was on a retail route with a horse, you used to use one horse wagons on some of the retail routes up around Dick Park. The man got right out on the ground. He never got in the wagon until he got his load out there. Just talk to the horse, and he'd go where you want him to go. There wasn't any shrubbery around for him to eat. You had to watch that and put a muzzle on some different teams. Get in the woman's shrubbery and everything, and the insurance company would always came.
On the ration, did you have to keep the horse during the day then?
Yeah, we fed him at noon. Yeah, we carried oats under the wagon seat and put the nose bag on when we ate. Oh, yeah. We had the one there. He hurt his leg. We got him traded the circus for another horse for him. And he got his leg fixed up at the barn block then. And we had him on the outdoor park run. And we got him Parkwood Avenue around down behind the park there. And a kid went by with an ice cream cone, and I seen him reaching for it. And I said, Jesus, my buddy, that horse likes ice cream. I'll get him some. So I went and I got him an ice cream cone. Man, did he eat that up. And a hot dog with onions, mustard, or whatever. Somebody must have fed him that in the circus. Yeah. Horses eat anything a person eats. Of course, tobacco, he couldn't get enough of that. He liked chewing tobacco, of course. Most any horse doesn't like chewing tobacco. I know they did when I was on the farm when I was a kid. They used to give him a little bit once in a while. The farmer said he's good for him. Yeah, that's the way we used to do that.
Well, did you miss the horses once you get back into the...
Well, not really. It was nice. It didn't take you too long to get in from your route. A lot of people that I talked to later on would say, geez, it takes you so long to pedal a route with horses. Well, no, because, like I say, you get down on the ground and then horses move up. It's a lot easier on you. You couldn't tell the truck to move up. You'd have to get in it and move up to his houses and get out and work the street and this way with a team and wagon while you could stay right in the ground. Talk to them and have them move up for you. Pedal the ice. I enjoyed that, just standing around.
You talked about a fire at the ice house.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember
anything about that? Well, yeah, the horses all burnt. Well, they think some hobo is sleeping in there. See, the barn boss just made his check every so often. So he had a little office there, I imagine. And then he'd make a check every so often. But in the meantime, if somebody snuck in there and started and didn't have strong hay and everything, got so bad. And of course, in them days, they didn't have fire equipment like they got today, and they had a while getting there. They got a lot of the horses out, but like I say, they were burnt so bad that they had to destroy them. They didn't destroy all of them. There were some that they could have saved, but some of them later on that they found breathed fire and they still had to shoot them. But they figured rather than replace the old horses, like I say, trucks were coming into existence. But even after the fire, they still had some teams on the road for quite a while. Because I used to, the team was there, the fellow would run out of ice, maybe down on Pole Avenue somewhere. I'd throw a loading truck and take it down to them instead of driving the team. That was inconvenient that way, driving clear back to plant for a load of ice. So I'd take it down to them, or somebody else. And we did that for quite a while. It was quite a while before they got rid of all the horses. I don't just remember what year that really did abolish all of them. I think when the companies merged there, they all merged together there. I can't think of the year that happened yet.
Was that after the
invasion? No, that was afterwards. since lasted up until World War II. They started bringing these refrigerators out. And just kept falling off and falling off. So I seen the handwriting on the wall, so I just got out. I think 41 I quit.
Well, what happened to the air conditioning?
Well, they naturally had to shut down because they didn't have enough. The remaining customers they did have, they forced them to buy mechanical refrigerators. So they got a lease quite a while after that. But finally they had to fold up because everybody... the biggest drawback was in later years, like I say, around 40, 41, was the inconvenience waiting on the ice man. The young housewife at that time, she didn't want to stand around and wait on the ice man. You couldn't run on a perfect schedule with the hot days, cool days. It was late or early. And they just didn't feel that they wanted to wait, so these mechanical refrigerators come into existence, so that people start buying them. But you can't stop progress. That's all there is to it. And so I bought one myself when I quit, because I couldn't get any ice. They had some ice men out, but he wouldn't come up this way, so I had to buy one myself. I went and got it for a while in the car. That had to stop. That was too inconvenient. And half the time when I went, they were out of ice. So, now, I think there's very little ice around now. They have some up in Federal Street yet. They bring it in from Canton, one truck. They did the last time I heard, and they have it up there for people who want it. Yeah, in the winter time, maybe you get through with your trip on your ice route a little early, or maybe 2, 3 o'clock in the afternoon, so then you went and hauled coal. Shovel it on and shovel it off. We didn't have no dump trucks in them days. You had to get a big, long chute. A lot of places you'd have to carry shovel full of time. You couldn't get near the coal hole. And practically everybody used coal. In the big buildings, a lot of them downtown. It's in Ohio Steam, from the steam company. Dollar Bank, we used to haul it down there, that fine coal for them stokers. Yeah, coal was a big business. They had the ice and coal, both.
How long would it take you? How much coal would you shovel, say, one afternoon?
Well, that all depends. A lot of times you had ton orders. Naturally, that'd take you longer. A lot of people didn't have money. They'd buy a ton at a time, or if you're filling the guy's cellar up, maybe he'd want 5, 6 ton.
What was the cost of all coal?
Well, it varied. Different types, anywhere from 6.5. And this coal from Kentucky was, I think it sold for about $8. It was clean burning. You didn't get many ashes with it. And what you did get was like wood ashes. It was fine. And the Castle Shannon coal we used to get from Pennsylvania, the Castle Shannon mine down there, they call it. I think it sold for around 6.5 a ton. And it went up and down accordingly, sometimes 1 to 5. Well, your crack coal or stoker coal was good. Of course, most of the parties who used that was the commercial, and they naturally got a rebate off of there since they were the retailer, the small man didn't, They get it from maybe 3, 3.5. The big greenhouses we used to, there's a big greenhouse in Boardman, Culver's Greenhouse, they call it. Ryan and Culver. We used to take coal out there. That was put there a must. Every time you got through there out, they'd start coal trucks going out there to supply in there. That's where I upset a truck out before they ever built that cemetery out there in Boardman. It was a 2-lane road at that time. I missed the berm of the road a little bit and pulled a knuckle off the steering. Me and Cole and all went over in the ditch there where that cemetery is now. Never got hurt. just got wet and dirty from the dirty coal in the water.
Well, what happened to the coal then?
Oh, we shovel it, get the truck on its feet, and the wrecker come on, get it on its feet, and then shovel it back on. Pick up, you couldn't shovel, and go on your way, get the little mechanic that could put a new thing underneath the truck to get her out on the road in them days.
Well, you were one of the fortunate ones that didn't get during the depression.
Yeah, I would work, that's what I say, that if I'd have worked for 10 cents an hour, I'd have been a millionaire the hours you put in. But they paid you by the day, and that was it. You belonged to them. That's all there was to it.
At that time, you know, a lot of people said that it was very hard, and they didn't, they had a hard time having enough food, and they couldn't do this. Did you experience any happy times during the
No, I did, yeah. I did, yes. Like I say, we were working, and my mother used to give us a lot of stuff from the farm. They raised chicken on them, and heck, I didn't starve. Of course, we didn't have nothing else. But
did you have your own garden? Did you raise
No, we didn't have no garden at all. You couldn't raise one around here. It wasn't built up like it is now, and all the dogs in the neighborhood dig it up, and kids had a ball field in the back there, and they run. We tried to have a garden one year back there, and to run through it, and you couldn't raise nothing. I bought some little trees to raise to plant around the place, and I think I bought 100 of them. They're about as big as a broom straw, or a little bigger, wheat straw, let's say, and I think I salvaged 3 out of the whole bunch, and then kids tracking them down. And, they finally all died, and I had to cut them down. Kids breaking the limbs off and everything, but kids is kids, you can't stop that.
What did you do after your long hours that you had? What did you do
when
you
came
across? You were a young married
friends
man at that time,
walked
up to the show.
Walk, yeah, and we could afford a show once a week, walk up to the show.
What was the price of the
35 cents, I believe. Somewhere around there. And that was a scrape to get that. That's what I say. We used to have to figure our budget to see if we could afford 35 cents to go. And sometimes we didn't, but most times we could.
Did
you walk? Yeah, we walked. We didn't have to drive. It wasn't too far away.
Were you renting at the time?
Yeah.
And then how expensive was your rent?
Well,
$18.
I think when we moved in here, he paid $18 or $25, and then he kept cutting it as things got bad. He said, there's no use of me robbing you, and he kept cutting my rent. And I think he got it down to $15. So that wasn't too bad. Then when we started to get out of the, things started to pick up a little, I bought the place.
What do you remember about the Youngstown, downtown, or any of the mills or anything like that? What was
added
to some of the people?
Well, naturally, they were depressed and put out and argued and grumbled like they do today about our government. They couldn't figure out why our government wouldn't help them. And all they could get from administration was they're trying to balance the budget. And I could never figure out why they kept it that. The way it is today, our debt is so high, they'll never get out of it, so. I first come to Youngstown, I was a little past 16.
Where did you originally come from?
Oh, from Pennsylvania.
From Pennsylvania.
Yeah, I was
Whereabouts?
Well, I was born in Punxsutawney, Pennsylvania. Worked around when I got big enough over there. Of course, my parents died when I was young. My father did in 1914. And father put us in an orphan home because he was a carpenter and he traveled all over the building, you know, wherever jobs were. He could take care of us, so he put us in there. We didn't like it there, my little brother and I. In fact, I ran away 3 times. Finally, they decided that
That was enough of that, so they took us out of there. And I used to work on farms for farmers and go to school, the ones that would leave me go. Winter come, why, some of them, they wanted you to work, they didn't want you to go to school. The ones didn't seem to have laws like they do today to make you go. At least they didn't come around and force me to go. And I kind of hammered around, I got a common school education. But I worked for different farmers. A lot of them were good, helped. A lot of people were good to me. A lot of them were bad. But that's the way it goes. And I got big enough, I dug coal. When I was 14 years old, I just worked in the coal mine. Then I, later on, I had a chance to come over here to Youngstown. Friends I knew, and, I could get a job over here. So I come over here, and like I say, I was a little past 16, going on 17, so.
Do you remember about when that was?
1923. Mm-hmm. And first place I went to get a job was, I think I stopped at the railroad. I went in there and I asked them, that was down by the Fifth Avenue. Well, it was called Home Street at that time. Down there they had a little office there. And I went in and I told them, asked the fellow if they was hiring any men. And he said, yeah. He said, if you see any, send them out. And I said, well, that's a smart answer. Oh, I said, I'm sorry, son. He said, no, he said, we ain't hiring. He said, that's just a little joke of mine. So, then I went to, down to this mill that's set down there in Westlake Crossing, Carnegie Mill owned it. And I got a job in there. I lied about my age. Got a job in there on the stranding mill. It was a hand mill. They made wrought iron, such as quarter rounds for, at that time, Henry Ford used them for brake rods in his cars. That was easy made. And the lightning rod, there was a big demand for lightning rods at that time. That their star steel, it was like an X on the end. He made that, and gun steel for gun barrels. He made that up 3/8 rounds. Everything was hand. You had to feed that bottom iron in by hand after they roughed it down. They roughed it down. Carried it from the furnace on tongs on a track. Everything was done by hand. Even the water system. That's when I first started in there, getting ahead of myself. I carried water. Buckets of water. Boy, I called them the elephants. They drink and spill more water out of them buckets hanging on the wire, you know. And they'd drink out of it, spill half of it getting a drink.
You carry the water for the men.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Then I got a job on the stranding mill. That was a tragic affair that I got the job with. This hot iron, they bring it out of the furnace and put it through them roughing rolls. It's a splinter on it like a Y. And this rougher was on the downside, they call it, for the upside and downside. There's three sets of rolls in there for the bring it by the bar back and put it through there. Well, when the fellow on the upside threw it through there, the Y opened up and that bar followed that man. He couldn't get away from one right through it. The whole 12 feet of hot iron went right through him and killed him on the spot. So he moved up on the mill. So then I got a job on the what's called strand rolls. I worked on the edging rolls where you have to bring the bar on edge and put the fine edge on it. Then I moved over onto the pony strand rolls, they call them, the pony roughing rolls. And the mill shut down before I got over on the roughing rolls where the big money was.
Why did they shut down?
Well, lack of orders. In them days, the mills, when I was a young fellow, they used to work. They'd work like the dickens for about 6 months a year, then they'd be down 6 months. Well, not clear down, I suppose a few men worked, but the big bulk of the men was off. So I was out of work, no compensation, nothing to fall back on. So I knew a friend that worked at the ice plant. I crossed the street practically, there in the corner of Westlake Crossing there and Graham Avenue. used to be a big market in there where the farmers brought their vegetables in that corner at night. So I went up there and talked to him, and he said, yeah, I'll talk for you and get you a job in there. You can help me. So I started in there at the ice plant.
When was that now?
The ice plant? Believe it or not, it was in the winter time when I started the ice plant, in the fall of 23, because I worked, like I say, about 6 months in 23 in the steel mill there. It was in the fall of the year that I got the job in 23 at the ice plant. Just a little plant there, they pull the ice by steam in them days. Used too much electric fuel. Today it's old style, but in them days, the latest equipment, I imagine. They use air cranes to pull the ice out of their hands, like later on. And that's how I got in the ice business. But, like I say about the city of Youngstown, when I first came to town here, there's been a big change. You couldn't get from the north side where I roomed up on Arlington Street there, in the corner of Arlington and Belmont. I roomed up there. You had to cross tracks. There wasn't a bridge across them tracks. Anywhere on the tracks, you had to drive down and wait for the gates there till they open them up to let you through. Now they've got bridges over every one of them.
This was crossing the Coney River?
No, it's crossing the railroad here. The Erie on this side. No, the Coney River's over on the other side.
But they have
oh yeah, they changed some of them. Spring Carlin is a big change there since I come to Youngstown. There used to be a great big hotel there just as you start up the hill there at Mahoney Avenue into Spring Carlin now. It was a great big hotel there. They called it the Fritz House. And that's all tore down now. And over on the other corner, there used to be a sidewalk store set there like the built out like over the river there. And now they're all gone. And they put this new bridge in. We used to come up there and over the old bridge there, they had a bridge there over the river. The policeman stood there with one of those signs. He turned, blow the whistle, leave you across. That's the way you went, up Federal Street, or up Home Street. It was called Home Street there, and it's called Fifth Avenue. And then when you got over on Home Street there, why, there's the railroad track up over the hill. Wick Avenue, all of them. Down Wick Avenue is a big railroad crossing there all the way. And they've changed Commerce Street all around. That used to be a narrow street. Now you got it all up and fixed up. And downtown, my goodness, I tell you, that's a major change. Each federal street down there, them great big street cars used to get down there. If you parked a truck or anything there, he couldn't get by. Wait till you got out of there. The street was narrow then. I don't know where they're widening it much anymore. In Watt Street, there it's awful wide now. It was just a two-lane road, and it wasn't even paved. It was mud. You had to be careful. You drove a wagon through there on a muddy day. You didn't splash people on the street. It was that narrow. Now it's awful wide. Of course, they paved it after that brick gave in there to get rid of that mud. And there used to be, when I first come to Youngstown, I was there a long time, a house right down on the square. I could sit on the other side of the Dollar Bank there.
Did a family live in there?
Yeah, I think he was a doctor, Dr. Wade, I believe was his name, as I remember. Yeah, a little picket fence around the front lawn. Yeah, it was there for quite a while.
Did he practice medicine
at that time? Oh, yeah. He was a doctor of medicine. I don't know whether he's a specialist in anything or not. In them days, specialists just seemed to be coming in their own here in the last 10, 15 years. Before, their family doctor, he took care of everything. Operated on you, everything else. Now they got a specialist for everything. These doctors. Like I say, they've done wonders with that. With Youngstown since I come here.
Do you remember any of the old stores that used to be downtown?
Oh, yeah, the old Lincoln Market.
And where was that?
That was down below where this house was set. That the market on clear from Federal Street clear through to Commerce. You could hear the cars on Commerce Street and wagons going when you were back there filling the ice for it. You had to carry that ice clear from Federal Street, clear back through that store with all them customers in there and everything, clear back to back end where the cooler was. Boy, that was a job. They used to pull four or five wagons up there. It was a big cooler. And Armors had a big place down on Commerce Street here, right by Commerce and Fifth, but like I say, it was Home Street then. They had a big packing plant in there, and we used to fill them big coolers. My goodness, they took a lot of ice. That was a big meat company they had there. That's all gone now. Took that out of there, they got the parking lots in there. And,
well, getting back to the square that we have now, do you remember
oh yeah, they had that there.
Yeah,
it was there. It was there. It's up and down. I don't know. They take it down a while there, and then they put it back up. But yeah, it was up there when I was there. Yeah, it was up there in the middle there, and a little grass around it. Yeah. Oh, it was always nice now down there in the square. But like I said, it made awful changes. Especially now, I haven't been down to see it. I drove through there, but I haven't been down there to walk around. I'd like to get down and see it and walk around down there, but I haven't got to it. Some other buildings they got rid of down there. Todd House was there for years. They got rid of that. I thought it was a big high-class hotel when I first come in. The Ohio Hotel over there. They're gone now. Well, it's still there, the high is, but I guess it's some kind of an apartment too. For the elderly people, I guess. And there was a big market over where the Vindicator building stands now. The City Market, they call it. Oh, that was a great big market. They sold meat and everything like that, and vegetables and everything. There's sort of a half of an open market, then it's closed. And then that was a great big market there. That's where my buddy got in trouble with the police down there one day. We had the team of wagons that time was filling the coolers. Big fellow by the name of John Peacock I worked with. We were inside packing the coolers, you know, the old ice, we had to pack it back. And we had parked along some cars out there with the team. And this gentleman come in and all dressed up, and he said, who in the, he swore, owns that team and wagon out there? Big John was down the floor, and I was up in the cooler, and he said, we do, why? He swore and said, get the thing out of there and everything. John said, we'll get it out of there when we get good and ready. He said, you'll move it now or else. And that boy John hit him. He went over one of them barrels of flour. They used to sell flour by the pound, you know, they had it in barrel. Here, got straightened around, but he showed us he's a detective. So he got on the phone, he said, send up a couple of policemen. I got a couple of ice men to take down. John said, you don't need no couple of men, we'll go down with you. So we went down and explained the story to the sergeant there. And he said, well, did this man tell you he was a policeman? John said, not till after I hit him. So the sergeant said to the detective, well, he said, he didn't know who you was yet. And else you want to prefer an assault charge, why, he said, there's nothing we can do about it. He said, no, he said, let's forget about it. So it was forgot about. But that was, oh, that was years
ago.
Where
was the police station located?
Right down where it is
right
now. Same place, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's been that same place since I can remember. Yeah.
But during that time, the policemen were more like patrolmen. They walked. They
oh, a lot of patrolmen downtown, yeah. They walked the beach. Yeah, old Pat Kinney, I knew him. Oh, Captain Coppersmith, I knew all those boys. Yeah, all since gone. All nice fellas. Yeah, I think our city does a good police department. They always did, and they have now. Oh, they find a few that's a little dishonest, but that happens in any city. But on the whole, I think we got a decent police force. Any time I called them, because we try to settle our disputes by ourselves in the neighborhood, but people don't listen. I've called them, and They've come up and straight things around, and that's it. And fire department, we got a good fire department, and them boys would beat it.
Do you remember any differences between the fire department then as to now?
Well, yes, they've got more modern equipment. I think they, I don't remember of any horse-driven fire department in this town. I think they're all mechanized when I got here.
Well, where was the fire station downtown? Do you remember
where that was? Yeah, it was down there next to the, where the city, It was across from the, right across from the High Hotel there, right next to the, police department, City Hall.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it set in there. They moved it up to, Belmont and Federal Street, there where it is today. That's number one up there. And they had one up to Madison, at Madison and, Elm. Number 8 up on Market Street. And the one in Steel and Mahoning. Same one's been there ever since I can remember. And the one they had in Fosterville out on Glenwood Avenue, I imagine it's still there. It was the last time. They've got more than that around. I just can't remember where they're all at the party. But,
during the Depression, when President Roosevelt initiated the different programs that he had, do you remember any of them and what effect they had on the people?
Well, yeah, they had this NRA, the National Recovery Act, for small business people that wanted to go in business for themselves. He would go, him and his Congress stimulated that program so that the small business doing a good thing would slowly.
But during Depression, didn't they have many of the
Well, yes, that was the whole trouble. That's what put the country where it was.
And did this act then apparently help these
people? Yeah, that's what that was mainly for, to get them back on the shops were shut down and everything. And he stimulated the money for that, appropriated money, the Congress did. So he wrote it out to do it himself, he wrote his Congress there. They stimulated them programs and lent the people money, imagine at small interest, so they could just pay it back, I'm sure of that, but I might have let them ask the government loses some. And they had this civil construction program, CC for the kids, young people, they went out and cleaned ditches and forests out, and other camps they lived right there. I don't know just exactly what they did pay them, but they paid them something besides keeping them. Of course, the WPA we had, $60 a month, I believe that was a public program. They done a lot of good. People used to kid them about leaning on shovels and one thing another, but they did a lot of work around the city.
Do you remember what kind of work the WPA did?
Sidewalks, driveway approaches. At one time, they come here and wanted to know if I wanted an approach put in. That cost me $5 under the program. I said, sure, I signed up, but they never got this far. They either run out of money or the program went out of business. Things like that they used to do. They put in a lot of sidewalks and sewers and about everything that they had to be done for the city. City didn't have the money to do it. The main question or problem was to get the men back to work and get the money flowing so they could buy things. After all, the workers, you give him money, he's going to spend it because he's going to buy things he needs for his family. And that's the man who keeps the country going, is he's the little man who keeps spending the money. When it stops, you take the money off the little man, and that's when the trouble begins.
Do you think during the Depression that people who were hard up, were they accepted? Did they accept welfare very easily, or did they more or less help one another?
Well, people helped each other, yes. A lot of good people helped one another with clothing that one couldn't do, with shoes, or whatever the case may be. Well, even some of them had gardens, and they had more than they could use. Big gardens people got along the Mahoning River there where that nice bottom soil was. Gee, there's so many gardens along the banks of that river. During the Depression, it raised, gee, with lots of stuff in it. Give it to each other and...
Because the programs that you mentioned, the men got paid for, but I'm wondering about the people who weren't able to get work. Did they accept that charity or go to
work? Well, yes, they had relief in them days. Like I say, I suppose their programs were limited, and there wasn't much relief like there is today. It was much harder to get. You had to be really down and out before you could get anything in the relief agency or anything. And, of course, there was people who was too proud to accept help. Some of our neighbors here, we wanted to help, and they was too proud to... take it, you try to explain to them that I always believed that. I don't know how some people do that. I think the good Lord put us here to help one another, whichever way we can, to try to explain that to them, but still they didn't want to accept help, you know. They're just too proud that they got along. They managed to. One woman we know now works for a dollar a day. Keep a big family she had.
What did she have to do?
And she scrubbed floors and anything she could get. Her husband died young and left her with about 8 children. She wouldn't accept help. She wouldn't accept relief or anything else. She tried to get help of some kind. I don't know just what it was. It got so complicated that she just wouldn't go through with it.
I imagine living on a dollar a day with 8 children was rather difficult.
Yeah, they ate a lot of soup. The girl told me later, the children, yeah, grown up now. Some of them still live on the street. Two of the girls still live. They were a set of twins. One family of their own. Like I said, try to help each other, but... I don't know of anybody in Youngstown that ever starved to death. I mean, they might not have got all they wanted to eat. They might have been hungry. I don't know if anybody had to sleep outside in the winter or anything like that. They must have. They seem to that, but they had shelter of some kind. These organizations, they gave shoes to needy children, flowers, things like that. They had programs there. Go there. When I was out working, I'd see them hauling it in little wagons, children and stuff they used to give them. Salt pork, they used to give away a lot of that. I guess you could go quite a ways on that stuff.
Well, do you think then, what has, you know, having lived through the Depression, and what have you learned from it? Has it taught you anything, or is there anything that you don't do because of it?
Well, after we got out of it, it kind of taught me that you just have to kind of provide for yourself, kind of try to put a little away for a rainy day if it ever happened again, and heaven forbid, but it didn't learn some people anything. I know people that didn't learn them a thing. They're back in the same old groove it was then. Like I say, people today, they make it too easy for them. A lot of them wouldn't care if a depression hit today because they know they'll be taken care of. All these programs we have today, which is right, I say they should have it, but they make it too easy. I understand people can refuse jobs if they're not in the same hour rate that they were working, things like that.
and collect relief. I can't understand that. When I was a young fellow and was out of work, and I would apply for a job, and they told me what they'd pay, and that was it. I couldn't say, no, I ain't going to work for that. But today, the way the law reads, they can do that. And I think it's wrong. You should take a job when you ain't got one of them. Any kind, whether it's in your line of work or what it is, until you can look around and better yourself, get another job. That's what I always did. If I got a bad job I didn't like when I was a young court boy, I'd work at it till I found a job. But today, like I say, they don't have to. They can get compensation or relief or whatever it is. They make it so easy. Something's got to be done about it, because I've seen some statistics here not too long ago where 50% of the people in this nation keep the other 50%. Well, that can't keep on going, because pretty soon there's going to be a bigger percentage on welfare and less percent keeping them. Well, that can't keep on going.
Well, you've heard the expression, in the good old days. Do you think that would apply to the Depression?
No, I don't think so. I think that was before the fast living and modernization. No, I think that was back in what I would call a horse buggy days, what they referred to the good old days back there. When you could get a nickel beer and a free lunch in a saloon. That's what I, that's my impression of the good old days. And of course, I think what the country was, in its most stable position in my lifetime, I was a Democrat myself, but during the Eisenhower administration, I think the country was on a good stable footing at that time, and they could have just kept it going that way. Everything seemed to be working right. Of course, the war was just over, and maybe that had something to do with it, I don't know, but during his two administrations, he was on a good sound footing base of that. As I can recall now, of course, it's been a good time. I think in the 40s there, before the war started, things were, after the Depression, was the beginning of the level off. There was no boom, but things were leveling off. People were working and hunting jobs. And at that time, like I say, things wasn't made too easy for people. There were jobs, they went out and got them. I understand there's a lot of employers today that would like to hire some young college kids or high school kids coming out of school. But they can't hire them unless they pay them a minimum wage. Well, they can't afford to do that. I think that's wrong. If a boy wants to work for $1.50 an hour, $2, a man can use them, that's fine and dandy. Because you've got to walk or crawl before you can walk. Would give a child or a young fellow some responsibilities, but when you just hand him a $5 an hour job, that's not good. Because I think a man should work himself up in a job or in his life. I don't think they should hand him all this stuff.
Well, getting back to the young people today, do you think that they would be able to survive a depression such as you did?
Well, I don't know how you could judge that. I don't think with the situation, if you would take these today the way they are and put them back there, no. No way. But like I say, the ones born in that area or big enough in that area, yes, they'd have to survive. Because they wouldn't have the knowledge and things handed to them like they do today. I don't say that I wouldn't want to, if I had any children, I wouldn't want them to have to work and go through what I went through. You always make it easier for your children to try. No, that's not what I'm trying to say, but they still should have some responsibility of some kind. They should be helped when they have to have help, naturally. But like elections near calling, they're going to try to create jobs, government. That's fine and dandy, but let's not keep them going. Create them until things pick up and then get rid of them. But seems like when they get the jobs gone, they never abolish them. They keep them on and gone, and then there's the taxpayer again.
Well, do you have any other remarks that you might want to think of now regarding the Depression? Any closing thoughts?
It was just a rough time, that's all. For all of us, we couldn't do the things we wanted to. I was young and I liked to done a lot of things, go places and do things. I just couldn't. I never had a vacation. I think the first vacation I ever had of any consequences was in 1951 when I worked the sheet and too. They gave us a vacation. But before that, the places I worked, the ice company, you never got no vacation. Anywhere else I ever worked outside until then, other places I worked, finished up my working career at the Cajun Company, which is now the wheat industry they merged. I finished out my trade there. Yeah, the Depression has taught some people, I've noticed that some people there after the Depression have taught them a lesson, but some of them didn't, they get back. Same old glue, never saving nothing. Come easy, go easy, till something hits. Something hit like it did in the Depression today, Uncle Sam would have to step in and do something and do it in a real big hurry, because I think the average young married couple today is mortgaged to the ears. They got to have everything. They got to have a car, they're buying a home. They got to have everything now, television, everything. When we were first married, we bought one thing at a time in Facebook. But they got everything now.
Well, in the early 1920s, we had a migration of immigrants from Europe and other countries. Do you think this had, the Depression coming so soon after they arrived here, made them change their mind about, America?
No way. No, I think if any of them, I think they're grateful that they got here. I don't believe that even today, as we over here, there's a lot of them that they can get here. I don't think that.
No matter what they have gone through, they still...
I still think they think it's the greatest country in the world, which I do too, but I don't think it slowed down immigration. I think I don't know what the quotas are. I suppose they raise them, lower them.
But I had, immigrants had heard that in America the streets are paved with gold.
Yeah.
And when they arrived here, and some of them had just started out, probably with jobs and things, and before you know the Depression hit, and they were without. And so I'm just thinking what their attitudes might be, on
Well,
them.
I really never come across any of it.
They didn't want to go back.
No, I don't think any of them back to Mountain Inn. Might have been a few, of course, I suppose. Some of them go back today, off and on, they're going, but I think that's a very small quota to go back once they get here. But that expression, streets are paved with gold, I don't know whether that was the lack of their education or what, but they took that in the wrong way. What that meant was that over here, everybody had an opportunity to be a millionaire or make money. Not to be hindered by his government, like they are over there. Whether that was their lack of schooling or knowledge or what, but if they thought that was true, I really didn't understand the situation. That's my theory of it. Somebody would tell me that some Shangri-La was a street you pay with gold, I'd just say, well, gee, that must be a great place to go that you can make some money. I wouldn't really think the streets were paved with gold. So, as I say, we got some rough times ahead yet. They say we're coming out of this recession. I don't know. It doesn't seem like it's going too fast. They're not working too good up the plant where I work there. They slow down. Some of them pick up, so I see the steel mills picked up now. Fabricators are down, so there's no Shangri-La.
But it's still a great country.
Have a hard time, huh?
But it's still a great country.
Oh, my goodness, yes. Yeah, I wouldn't trade it for anything else in the world. Like the city of Youngstown, where I've made my fortune, as you say, as it goes. lived here. I don't think I'd want to live anywhere else. I never had any desire to move, even as bad as things got. We had some rough times, good times. It all comes out. No, I wouldn't want to live anywhere else. I was married here, and my wife is here. I met her in town here. Of course, she's from Pennsylvania, too. She worked here in town. We made out all right. When I got married, I think I had $2 left after I got married. I paid the priest, so we started from there.
How much was your marriage, I
think? $2.
What's it still? What's $2?
That time, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, the depression was a bad thing. It was part of our life, and thank goodness it's in the past, and we hope it never happens again.
Okay, thank you for your interview, Mr. Barnhart.
This was an interview with Mr. Henry Russell Barnhart for the Youngstown State University Oral History Department Depression Project by Dolores Margiotta at 125 South Dunlap on May 12th at 7:30 p.m., 1976.